Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Successful media and public affairs consultant, accomplished entrepreneur and national writer and contributor, attorney who served in the Missouri House of Representatives, worked in the White House and CNN, thought leader, entrepreneur, and host who takes the conversation to the next level.
Prepare to get rare access to fascinating guests.
You're connected. You have the it factor. You've joined
Grill Nation.
Everybody over there!
Get a hooter!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Ooh-way.
Connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason Grill. Connect with the show on Twitter at Grill Nation Show. And online at grillnationshow.com.
Welcome your host of Grill Nation. Always dressed up and ready to go, even in a radio studio. Here's Jason Grill.
Hello and welcome to the Grill Nation Show with me, your host, Jason Grill, here on 980 AM KMBZ, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher via podcast. And appreciate you listening today on grillnationshow.com. It's going to be a fun show here today. I'm very excited about it as we enter, get into the month of October. We're continuing to have great shows. I hope you've enjoyed the last few months of shows, and this one will be no different. I want to thank our partner and supporter of the Grill Nation Show, title sponsors, one of which will be joining me here in a second. They are Truss, MoBank, BOK Financial, and Two West Advisors, and Ryan Rink. Some of my guest hosts and on-air contributors are the Rieger and Jay Rieger & Co., Ryan Mabey, One Light Luxury Apartments, and Reactor Design Studios, and Clifton Alexander. I mentioned one of our title sponsors joins us each and every month, MoBank, BOK Financial, and Michael Viazzoli, the president and CEO, is with me here today, and welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. Love being here.
It's great to have you. Every month we do this, and this show today will be real exciting. We are going to have on Tyler Knotberg, who is the chairman and CEO of U.S. Engineering. The website is usengineering.com. You might have seen their sign or one of their vans driving around Kansas City, but it's a company that's been around, a fifth-generation company, since the late 1800s here in the Kansas City area, which is pretty important, pretty amazing that it's still going strong and over close to 1,200 employees, I believe. So tell us about them a little bit, Michael, how you know Tyler, and what we're going to talk about today.
Well, I think what you'll find out is, one, Tyler's just a solid person. I think you're really going to enjoy just meeting him. Two, I think you're going to be really kind of shocked, maybe, the size and scope of the organization, their impact, and the influence. And then just talking about what Tyler and the company are doing to kind of help promote the city and build the city, it's really understated, but it's a really neat story.
Mm-hmm. And Tyler has an interesting background. He, you know, this is a family business, I guess you would say, throughout the years. He lived in D.C. for a while. We'll get into that. Was in policy and kind of did some work with financial work, actually, when he was in D.C. as well. But we studied over abroad in London and England, and, you know, has done a lot of different things and came back to Kansas City from Kansas City. His wife's from Kansas City originally. They live here now. And he just seems to me to be a very good, business leader and also a, entrepreneur. He has an entrepreneurial aspects to him as well.
Well, I think there's some softer skills that he brings to kind of all of those things that kind of help him make, be so as effective as he is.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have Tyler on the show here after the break. I've met him a few years ago, actually, but I'm excited to connect with him again and talk to him. He seems to have his pulse on what's going on here in Kansas City. And, you know, some of you might have seen that Meyer Circle fountain getting refixed up here again. And I think he's involved with that. I'll have some funny stories to share about that today as well. I want to mention you can connect with the show at grillnationshow.com and also at on Twitter at Jason Grill and at Grill Nation Show. Appreciate you reaching out to me and sharing the show via social media each and every week, and appreciate it, what you guys are doing to help the show grow, and all the kind comments, very much appreciated. Michael, MoBank, BOK Financial, website is mobank.com. Besides having we're taping the show, but it's airing on Saturday. Besides having Columbus Day off, I needed to talk to someone, but one of my passwords, I could not figure it out for the life of me. But you guys are growing like crazy and doing a lot of great things here in Kansas City. And I know you're a busy man. We talk to you each and every month with a thought leader. But any news you want to report to us about BOK Financial or a MoBank? I know things are moving fast and furious as always.
Well, at a national level, a big bank level, things seem to be going very well. A lot of people would have assumed that with the energy challenges over the last couple of years, the challenges that just the regions in Texas and Oklahoma have faced, that an organization that's concentrated in those areas might be impacted by that. And I think you can say we have been a little bit, but I think people are generally going to be surprised as to kind of how strong and the overall portfolio of the company is, such that we'll continue to see strength in that. And then locally, it has just been a hell of a lot of fun this year in terms of kind of bringing the Legacy Bank Kansas City business, Legacy Missouri Bank business together to what we're calling today as MoBank. Fun, you know, earlier in the year, it was a little struggle with our integration issues and we tripped all of ourselves. But kind of where I think about where we are now, as engaged as our folks are, the excitement around the business, the good things that we continue to be doing for our, kind of our whole client base. And as much as that's been fun, the impact we continue to make in the business. We got a United Way campaign kicking off. I was part of a group to help raise money for this new Picasso exhibit that's coming to town.
Oh, really?
We've got people. Tyler's going to mention a nonprofit that he's involved in. One of our senior leaders is on that board with him. We got a lot of really neat things going on in the community. So that feels right. It feels part of who our city is and certainly who we as an organization are.
Mm-hmm. And MoBank.com is the website. For more information, you'll recognize the orange.
Yes.
That I see all over town these days.
Very distinctive. I love it. It is so different.
You know, I actually think I'm going to go by the actual bank at some point. I've been using too much mobile technology that y'all's offers, but I'm thinking I need to stop through that Crossroads location again sometime soon and see everyone down
there. Well, the terminology is omnichannel.
It's
all these different ways that we can connect with our clients, and our clients can connect with us. And the mobile activity is whatever form that is help for transactions. But I've never felt that's a way to build relationships. And build relationships, you need the person-to-person interaction. Mm-hmm. And that could be done a lot of different ways as well. One thing I forgot to mention was, every first Friday down at the Crossroads, at our branch, we have some activity. Mm-hmm. Last Friday we had our annual rock, paper, scissors competition.
Okay.
And it was awesome. For all the concerns we had early in the day about the rain, our stage was up, our big bracket was up there. We had our host that was managing kind of the 1, 2, 3. We had beer flowing. We had pizza from Up Down next door. And it was just great.
You know what's funny is too, you never know with those first Fridays in October, right?
Yeah.
It turned out to be a very warm, and was it a good first Fridays then?
It was a little slow because of Columbus Day.
Okay.
Probably had people kind of leaving early for, it seemed light.
Yeah.
But just up and down
from,
the crossroads.
From Chicago that were in town, and they loved it. They moved downtown Kansas City.
Yeah.
They've been here for a while, but they'd never done a first Fridays and they loved it.
The whole atmosphere is so unique.
Yeah. I always try to figure out which is the busiest first Fridays. It usually is like, early summer, maybe late spring.
When everybody comes out of hibernation, everybody's excited to be walking up and down that street.
Such a great location there for you guys. Just such a great
location.
That's
perfect.
You helped
true for
that and it's
yeah.
a cool bank. It really
and it's
is.
True to that community in the same way that Prairie Village Ranch is there, Brookside, down well, obviously over in the park in the summer as well. So those physical branches meet, and then we
hello
have folks
and welcome back to
four or five
Grill Nation. I'm your host, Jason Grill. Thanks for listening today on 980
Greg
KMBZ,
Greg Bank,
as well as on Grill Nation
today.
Michael Bizzoli will be joining me for the whole show, as well as Tyler Knapberg, who's the CEO and chairman of US
Radio.
Engineering Company.
If you like our show, usengineering.com.
One of the 100
most powerful people
do
in Kansas City
on social media,
greatly appreciate it.
Tyler will be
very happy to have on one of our
thanks for being here today, Michael. We'll be right back
on the Grill Nation
each and every month. Representing MoBank and BOK Financial, Michael Giazzoli, President and CEO. Welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here every month. And, very excited about our guest today. I appreciate you saying what's up. How are you?
I'm doing better than I deserve.
Okay, great, great. Well, our guest today is Tyler Notberg, who's the chairman and CEO of U.S. Engineering. And welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so how do you guys know each other? Let's start that, because
it's a small town, and I think we crossed paths in two or three different places, and certainly Tyler's very active in social services and different civic events, and then a couple of business associations that we're involved in together, and thankfully we also have a good business relationship too, so it's nice.
That is good. Well, Tyler, let's learn a little bit about you, then we'll get into kind of U.S. Engineering and the company. I know it's been around for quite a long time. Tell us about your background and kind of how you – I know you worked in the policy area for a while in D.C. and did a lot of different things throughout the United States and, I believe, the world. So I'd love to talk about that first, then we'll get into kind of what brought you back to Kansas City. So
Sure. Well, I grew up in Kansas City and grew up loving all of the things about Kansas City, including the Kansas City Royals and everything that we got to experience back in the 1980s as I was growing up here. But then I went to school in Vermont to a college called Middlebury.
How'd you end up there? That's an interesting move.
I was really interested in languages.
Okay.
And Middlebury is very well known for its language program, has a strong political science program, international relations. And those were a lot of the things that I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
did you like it up there?
I've never been
to the state of Vermont, so that's why I ask. Everyone that goes to the It's either Maine or Vermont, always rave about those two states.
You love it. It's beautiful. There's a lot of snow on the ground for long periods of time, so that's the way that you just have to live life up there. There were certainly days during the winter when you would look out across campus and all you would see was the little hats from, you know, people bobbing through all of the different snow pathways that had to be made. So. Mm. But, you know, at the same time, if you love skiing, if you love the outdoors, it's just a beautiful place to be.
Mm-hmm. So you went there and then after that you went overseas?
So I was fortunate. I had won a scholarship called the Casby Scholarship, and it allowed me to go study at Oxford for a couple of years. And so I did that. So lived over in England for a couple of years.
I think that's Michael, you might agree or disagree, but I think studying abroad or doing something abroad when you're in that age is huge.
Oh, it's,
I think for a world,
it's phenomenal.
Yeah. If you have that opportunity, I know you guys both have kids, I think around the ages that what yours are in college, right?
I have a couple in college
so hopefully you're promoting that, right, Michael?
Absolutely. Well, and just kind of my family and heritage and growing up, my parents are both Swiss and having lived overseas and worked overseas, it's critical to do that. Yeah.
And so you enjoyed that experience?
I loved it. My wife, my fiance at the time, she came over with me as well. So it allowed us to experience that together. And we got to, you know, do a lot of traveling and also to be in just such a beautiful place and form some great friendships. But as you all were just saying, you know, you get your perspective opened up even more just in terms of what possibilities look like and different people, problems, opportunities, solutions, all the kinds of inputs that I think you need to kind of broaden your worldview.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't stay over there. You came back.
Yeah, no, my wife got a job working as an occupational therapist in Washington, D.C., and I had gotten a job working for Susan Eisenhower at a place called the Eisenhower Institute. And I had previously done an internship for Senator Richard Lugar up on the Hill between my sophomore and junior year at college. So I had fallen in love with the experience in Washington, D.C., so it was a great fit for us. So we ended up living there for about 6 years.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And
so you really did catch the bug there, I guess. Six years is a long time in D.C.
Yeah, we did.
You're either there for a few years or you're there for like your rest
I heard
of your
6 years was kind of like the max. If you're there more than 6 years, you're trapped.
It's, you know, it's a very transient place, but at the same time, I mean, it's filled with a lot of different cultures. International, you have a strong focus obviously on politics while you're there, but, there's also a very, very rich arts scene. There's a great deal of entrepreneurialism that's kind of sprouted up obviously in Northern Virginia. You had a lot of tech companies that were invested in being there and whether those companies were there for policy purposes or not, it still kind of created a nice kind of technology sector.
They have a lot of cranes in there in DC, right?
Oh yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
And, downtown baseball now, or I guess not downtown, but city baseball, the Nationals are in a good spot. They're redeveloping that whole area. I mean, there is a lot of development, good restaurants. It's a fun city irrespectable where you are on the political spectrum. It's there's stuff to do there. So that's cool. So 6 years there. And
yeah. Well, and the other thing was, even though it is a transient city, we actually were living there during 9/11. So we got to experience what the community did to kind of come together in the wake of that, in a way that I think it's very difficult to see Washington as a community-based city in the same way, say, a Kansas City is. But that really changed in 2001, and so we got to experience what that whole process was like from a rebuilding standpoint and everything that went on. So that was very influential too.
That's cool. And so at that point, did you come back to Kansas City, or did you work in New York for a while? I might have read. Or?
So I had actually gotten a job after working at the Eisenhower Institute for an organization called Gerson Lehrman Group, which was a startup that was based out of New York. And a friend of mine from Oxford, who had started working there, had talked with me about potentially helping them open up a Washington, D.C. office that focused on research for hedge funds and mutual funds based out of New York that really focused on legislative affairs type issues. And so I got to travel back and forth between New York and Kansas City on a regular basis and work with that team as they kind of built the company up. And so that was exciting to be part of a startup, a lot of enthusiasm, sort of a new way of approaching research, really trying to leverage technology and to kind of see what, that they were doing was just fascinating. So
that is cool. And I love, obviously you guys know, I love public affairs and policy and whatnot. So you can combine that with the startup. I feel like that's the great ticket right there.
Yeah. It was really neat. And then at the time, so my wife and I had our first child, Maggie. She'd been born in Virginia, and we were thinking about, you know, what we wanted in terms of what our future was. And a lot of the roads for Gerson Lehrman Group were leading back to New York City at some point. And that was something that was interesting to us. But at the same time, both of us were originally from Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the back of both of our minds, maybe we were always thinking at some point, maybe we would move back to Kansas City. It didn't seem like there was sort of an obvious path, but at the same time, there was an opportunity that existed with U.S. engineering that my dad had put in place many years ago when he had been diagnosed with cancer and started planning what was going to happen to U.S. engineering, because he'd been the fourth generation leader of U.S. engineering. And he didn't know whether I was going to be interested in getting involved one day or my sister was going to be involved one day. So when he was diagnosed with cancer, he sort of put a management succession plan in place, but it actually provided an opportunity for me or my sister to come back and get involved one day if we chose to do so. So this opportunity was out there, but I'd never really worked in the construction industry and hadn't really considered it seriously. But some transitions that were going on at U.S. Engineering that were taking place at the same time that Lee and I were considering maybe moving back to Kansas City, being closer to our families, and you know, we had Maggie. All of those things came together, so we moved back to Kansas City, and I got involved in U.S. engineering.
Okay. And what year was that? How long have you been back?
So that was 2005.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Talk to us a little bit about the history of U.S. engineering, and then the next segment, well, let's get into kind of the current day and all the things that are going on over there and what you're all doing in the Kansas City community. But talk to us a little bit about the history. You mentioned fifth generation, is that right?
Yeah. So my great-great-grandfather, Gustav, started the company over in Germany back in 1855, but it was a metalworking company. And he and his wife, Margaret, Maggie, brought themselves and their three sons to the United States, specifically here to Kansas City in 1889, and hung a shingle in 1893. So started the same metalworking company in Kansas City in 1893. But then as things evolved, they went with technology and sort of turned the company into a mechanical construction company. So focusing on installing plumbing systems, and then as technology made it possible to do more indoor refrigeration or air conditioning, Freon became a very popular refrigerant. More and more buildings had, conditioned spaces. So they evolved into this mechanical contracting company. And it stayed in the family through various generations and iterations up through my dad when he passed away in 1997, so about 20 years ago. And so that's the point in time where things kind of passed out of the family for the first time ever ownership did. until Lee and I came back and got involved.
So. It's pretty interesting, Michael, isn't it, that this company started in Germany, huh?
Yeah.
And they located in Kansas City in 1887, you said, or 89?
Well, they moved over in 89, but opened up in 93. But you look it up, you see there was a very large sort of European and German migration to the United States in the late 19th century for a whole variety of reasons. And they actually followed some friends who had moved here, actually to Topeka, but then they never made it past Kansas City. And, you know, hey.
It's funny how that happens.
Three days of trail ride to Topeka. They don't want to go that far. But it's funny you mentioned,
We got to go to break here soon.
I was just going to say, with technology, at that point in time, is a very different definition of changing technology as we talk about it today. I would think technology would have been just, you know, different ways of transmitting energy or electricity or transporting water, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think technology in a lot of ways becomes shorthand for any kind of disruptive change that takes place.
Fair.
So, you know, you can call it what you want, but it certainly had an influence.
Yeah.
We'll be right back on Grill Nation.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Welcome back to the Grill Nation show with Jason Grill, 980 AM KMBZ. Appreciate you joining us again today, and all those listening on iTunes and Stitcher via podcast. Appreciate you listening as well. You can connect with me on Twitter at Jason Grill and at Grill Nation Show, as well as find all of our guest information, old shows, and photos of our guests at grillnationshow.com. We're talking to Tyler Knotberg, who's the CEO of U.S. Engineering, chairman and CEO of U.S. Engineering, and Michael Viazzoli, who's the president and CEO of MoBank and BOK Financial, a great supporter and partner with the show. Michael, I wanted to turn it over to you. We're going to learn more about U.S. Engineering and all different types of things that they're doing, as well as their culture, and talk more about the business aspects here. I wanted you to lead that off for us today.
Sure. Well, you mentioned earlier U.S. Engineering. We see the logo everywhere, and we see the impact everywhere. But what's a best way to describe what you do and kind of size and scope of the company?
So we're a mechanical contractor. And what that generally means is that if you walk into a building and you look around and you see all the great things that go into building that building, a lot of our stuff ends up behind the walls, unless you walk into the bathrooms, where our stuff ends up being front and center. So what we do is we install plumbing, piping, and HVAC systems. So we literally have people who help manage the design, help manage all of the energy solutions associated with the design, actually install the system. So literally having people installing welded carbon steel pipe or soldering copper or putting up sheet metal. And then at the end of the day, we end up usually, hopefully, maintaining those systems and helping owners manage what that energy looks like on the back end, so that at the end of the building's life cycle, you're able to look back and say, hey, you know, we really reduced whatever the total cost of owning those systems were, because a lot of the systems that we end up installing and managing and helping owners manage are the most dynamic, energy-sucking systems and expensive aspects of what a building actually costs.
Yeah.
So
haven't I seen you also do infrastructure projects as well, though?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have done a number of infrastructure projects, and it could be kind of small infrastructure projects. But, you know, one of the higher profile ones locally here was the new Meyer Circle, renovated Meyer Circle fountain. But, you know,
drive by it all the time.
Drive by all the time. We had our big sign up there at one point, but really it was mostly all of my friends calling, asking when they were going to be able to access the westbound lanes rather than, hey, the fountain looks great.
So just real briefly, that fountain has been off for a while, right?
It was, yeah. There was a lot that needed to be done, and it's sort of a good example of deferred maintenance.
Yeah, so. I feel like that fountain and the Western Auto sign need to be turned back on. The Western Auto sign downtown has been off for a couple of years, and I always think to myself, well, a bunch of people should just get together and start paying for that. It's iconic.
And that's really what happened. And there was a community effort to help pay for turning that fountain back on. And what was interesting was we did turn it back on the other day and begin sort of testing it. And again, I had some friends who had kind of texted me and said, you know, I drove by and it was on and there was some red lights on and I was thinking about the Chiefs, and I was thinking about Kansas City, and I got a little tear in my eye. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that really is one of the things that's emblematic of what our city is about, which is kind of rallying around some of these kind of community efforts. And it doesn't have to be a fountain. It could be something that's, you know, people might consider more substantial, like a community effort, you know, downtown or, you know, east of the city or right. wherever it is. But it's something that sort of brings people together.
You mentioned you had no experience in any of this when you took over, or you went
None.
Inside. So you worked in the business, obviously, for a while before you became the CEO, correct?
I did. When I came back and joined U.S. Engineering, everybody knew, obviously, I was a member of the Knottberg family. Mm-hmm. And so part of the plan was for my wife and I to come back and really repurchase a controlling interest in the company, which was a big leap for us. But it was also a big leap for this institution that had more than just Knottberg family members associated with it. We've got multiple generations of other families that feel just as much ownership for the organization. So when you kind of look at all of those different people who are invested in what the company has been and where the company is likely to go in the future, they spent a lot of time teaching me this is what's important about being at U.S. Engineering, not just the technical aspects of it, but really the culture of what the organization represents to them, to those families, to the people who have worked there for multiple generations who are not members of the Knottberg family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting listening to you when you talk about how you describe the company and kind of what your charge is and what you hope to do longer term with the companies, with your clients, and also the thing about culture and trying to get everybody's input on everything. That's a very different tone than I would expect from a person who grew up in kind of a mechanical contracting company. I suspect your not having been involved early in your career with the company has kind of helped you have that different outsider perspective on things.
Well, I think I've been able to bring both. I've been able to bring whatever pressure you feel in terms of being a steward of this great institution on a go-forward basis is also mixed with the idea that, hey, because the company has been around so long, we have to inject entrepreneurial elements into the way the company behaves. And some of that, or a lot of that, actually has to do with generally what kinds of people you want within the organization driving what that change is. I mean, you know, if I had a dime for every single time someone says, just in the last few years, you know, technology is changing things and the economy is changing and we're feeling all of these external pressures. If you're going to deal with that, I think as an organization, whether you're a startup or whether you're an organization that's been around for a long time, you have to sort of embrace what that dynamic is. Yeah. And I think culture ultimately ends up playing a larger role in that than simply saying this is what our business strategy is or this is what our strategic plan is, because it's the people who are going to actually drive that strategy forward. So
how many people in the company?
So overall, between all of our offices, we've got about 1,200 people in the office and in the field. Our headquarters is based here in Kansas City. We've got a large office out that's been out in the Denver area for about 50 years, but we also have, you know, some satellite offices all over the place. We're doing a large project in Manhattan, Kansas right now, and so we've established an office out there, and then we're doing work down in Oklahoma and southeast Missouri, so we're sort of all over the place.
1,200 employees, though. That's a lot of employees. And one of the things you mentioned in an article.
Team members, not employees.
The Business Journal wrote an article about you when you came back, and you talked about culture and work-life balance, and you said that they once heard a quote from someone that you really respect that said, you have to do your best to manage your family like a business and manage your business like a family. Talked about that. I thought that was interesting. I might tweet that quote out today and just attribute it to myself. No, I'm kidding. We'll attribute it to,
that's perfect.
To you.
Perfect.
But tell us about that, because I've never heard that before.
Well, so the general sentiment behind that is that when you're working with your family to try and do everything from scheduling school or activity events or trying to figure out, okay, what direction do we want to go with a vacation or dealing with planning the holidays, I think if you bring the type of discipline to things like scheduling and being very intentional about, okay, you know, what's our family mission statement going to be? Then you begin to sort of craft this identity around your family, and you manage it in a way that is that you know helps everybody provide input on the direction that you're going. So there's a culture within your family that you get to manage as well, but it's something that's all part of the team. You know, my wife Lee really drives a lot of that, And now that our kids are getting older too, I mean, they do as well. And so trying to figure out how do you have that input, that's really important. And that all goes wrong when you start feeling sort of self-righteous about whatever your role is. And we always joke about the fact that, you know, hey, you may be CEO, at U.S. Engineering during the day, but, you know, it's really clear. Like when you look at my wife's signature line on her email, it says chairman and CEO of the Knopperg family. And that's very real. On the other hand, you know, when you look at, you know, your organization, a lot of the things that attract people to staying at a place where they're working is the culture of the organization. And does it feel like a family? Do you feel like you have people who respect what you do and who you respect as individuals, in the same way that you get all of that kind of goodwill from your family because you're family? Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to inject moments that feel like family style moments into the way your business is functioning, then you can manage your business a little bit like a family as well. And granted, with 1,200 people, I can't go around and have family dinners with all 1,200 different people who are on the team. But if you've got a culture that provides for those kinds of opportunities for individuals within the organization, other leaders who are really driving the business to do so, I feel like that's something that's, you know, very important. And as we've grown as a business, that becomes different, you know, becomes difficult to maintain.
Mm-hmm. What's a family style moment? Define what does that look like, or different examples of that?
Well, I mean, it could be everything from making sure that people on your team have time to go out or cut out work to go grab a beer or grab a coffee together, mm-hmm. to getting everybody together to go participate in a run, you know, a 10K, a charitable 10K or 5K or something along those lines.
Is there such thing as a 1K? Because I would do that.
Hey, we got the Kansas City Marathon's coming up here in a few weeks, Michael.
Is it?
I'm doing the half. I couldn't all commit to the full.
But I can pass out water.
They might have a 5K. But yeah, I mean, those types of things are important.
But it's also,
to communicate with your coworkers or your team outside of the office is good too.
And it's and it's not even really also the big moments, right? It's those sort of spaces in between the most mundane moments where you just walk by someone's office, or you've got, you know, a group of people who just like to sit down and take an extra 5 minutes after a staff meeting and say, you know, how was your weekend? And to provide time for those types of conversations, because that, I think, really builds the fabric of what that family relationship looks like. You all know, birthdays and holidays are great with your family, but it's really, you know, some of those moments where you're just kind of sitting around watching TV, or you're just sitting there having dinner,
yeah.
And what do you talk about?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Tyler Knopperg is our guest CEO and chairman and CEO of U.S. Engineering. Michael Viazzoli is a partner and supporter of Grill Nation, Mo Bank, and BOK Financial, also joining us. After the break, I want to talk a little bit about the Alliance for Childhood Education, as well as talk about Kansas City as a whole. You're listening to Grill Nation. Thanks for joining us.
Loosen them shoulders up, blow it up, let's work. Throw some perm on your attitude. Girl, you gotta relax.
Hello and welcome back to the Grill Nation Show on KMBZ 980 AM. Appreciate you joining us today on the show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. Today's guests have been Tyler Knopperg, Chairman and CEO of U.S. Engineering, and Michael Viazzoli, CEO and President of MoBank and BOK Financial. Great show so far, guys. I want to talk about something you got involved with, Tyler, a few years ago. That was the Alliance for Childhood Education that you founded. Tell us about that organization.
The Alliance was created with the idea that as business leaders, one of the issues that seems to be most important long-term or strategically for those of us who are running businesses, and even those of us who are not running businesses, is education. What does the quality overall of the workforce look like long term? And one of the things that we did is we compared it to, say, a third world country where clean water is the single most important issue that you have to address before you can create any kind of dynamic economy. Well, here in the United States, fortunately, we don't have clean water as a primary issue to getting our economy functioning. So what's next? Well, education, mm-hmm. to me, seems to be what our clean water issue is. And so ACE was created to get business leaders focused on what quality education looks like, what opportunities for high quality education looks like. And when we originally started it, it was focused primarily on early childhood education mm-hmm. and why business leaders need to become focused on these issues and what it means in order to address what those workforce development issues look like in the future.
Mm-hmm. And this is a nonprofit, nonpartisan coalition of business leaders committed to improving Kansas and Missouri's education systems. What have you found so far? What is your take so far on all the work you all have done and what we need to do to move forward?
Well, the first thing that I would say is there are a lot of unbelievable providers who are out there, people who work all of the time trying to make sure that young individuals in the community have access to these opportunities. And so there are a lot of different efforts that are going on both sides of the state line and well outside the borders of just Kansas City. But there are a lot of ways that business could be more involved in that. So when it comes to areas where business leaders need to be focusing their attention, it needs to be on understanding why is early childhood education something that people need to be focused on. Elected officials like to talk about being involved and supportive of early childhood education, but those aren't necessarily people who are going to vote for them because they're 2 and 3 year olds. Mm-hmm. So the question is, who is actually going to be kind of representing what the interests of those children are on a sustained basis that are not in the pressure cooker of an election cycle? And what that means is that the role the business community can play is in helping to connect legislators with providers and the business community in order to try and develop a sort of cohesive approach to how this issue needs to be moved forward down the road. So our president, Tori Peterson, does a tremendous job of working with a lot of those different coalitions, and our board does as well in terms of trying to build awareness about, okay, what are the kind of the hot button topics that we need to be looking at right now.
Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with the discussion topic, which is, I think everybody agree education is important. Kids are future, and you hear a lot of that. And obviously a lot of people believe it as well. But that investment today takes a generation to kind of demonstrate that it's taking hold and make a difference. How do you get people to think about that long term of a perspective when you're talking about some kind of investment or change in policy or something like that?
Well, so I think you can look at it in two ways. I think there are short term benefits and I think there are long term benefits. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to use data to support both of them.
Right.
So, for example, just take the very basic research on how, you know, almost 80 to 90% of the entire brain gets formed by the age of between 3 and 5. Okay. So there's a factual data point. Isn't that an area where we would like to invest a lot of early dollars? Then there's the work that was done by James Heckman, who is Nobel Prize winning former head of the Federal Reserve up in Minnesota, who wrote a paper talking about how there's a 7-to-1 payback on every dollar invested in early childhood education. And that payback has a triple net benefit of both giving people a quality education, preventing future social problems, and then also creating an economic benefit for the people who are actually providing that service.
Mm-hmm.
So you start from there and you say, okay, well, if this investment means so much, how do you get the community behind those kinds of initiatives? And I think that the short term, if you've got a system that's in place that's very attractive to businesses who, say, want to move to Kansas City or are thinking of starting a business in the Kansas City region, then they know that when those young people who are part of those businesses have children, that those children have a good place to go while mom and or dad go off to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the immediate benefit, is you actually are providing an opportunity for those parents to go work while their children are getting a high quality education. So you've got that in the immediate short term. And that's attractive from a talent attraction standpoint today.
Okay.
The long-term benefit absolutely comes from how those children will benefit over time, you know, in terms of the direction that they go, their educational trajectory.
Yeah.
And it's not just about memorizing facts in kindergarten or preschool where the benefits of that fade over time. It's about sustained attention throughout the entire spectrum of the education system, which is one of the reasons why ACE said, hey, you know, we don't want to just be focused on early childhood education. We need to understand how this impacts the direction that these children are going throughout the system, especially children who are highly disadvantaged from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I'm right, there's a statistic that something like up to the age of five, you're kind of learning how to read, and then after that, you're reading how to learn.
Yeah, well, there was a great initiative here in Kansas City, the Mayor's Reading Initiative, mm-hmm. where they talked about the fact that up until third grade, you learn how to read, and then from that point forward, you read in order to learn. And that's absolutely true. You have to get them to the point in third grade where they're able to read and
at
begin
third grade
to
level, right.
Right, you know, yeah. read so that you can learn. So if you just keep backing it up, how do you get there? How do you get to kindergarten ready to, you know, learn how to read?
Yeah.
ACE Invest is the website, correct?
That's
ACEinvest.org, if you want to check that out, Alliance for Childhood Education. And we're talking to Tyler Knotberg, who's CEO and chairman of U.S. Engineering. The website for U.S. Engineering is just usengineering.com. Check it out. A couple minutes left here, Tyler. You moved back to Kansas City, it seems like about 10, 15 years ago. What are your thoughts right now on what we're doing here as a city and what we could do better and what you think we're really doing well?
I think there's a tremendous opportunity here in Kansas City to capitalize on the trajectory that we have sort of taken. I'll tell anyone who listens, I feel like Kansas City was on a very good trajectory in 2014, and it just inclined a little bit more when Sal Perez hit that double down the third base line as we watched the Royals kind of move on. I feel like we gained a little bit more of an identity as a city, and we gained a little bit of confidence as a city and a region, quite frankly. And so I think that all of the development that has gone on economically has been very positive for the city. I think, you know, our investments in arts and culture are tremendous. I would say that one of the strengths of Kansas City overall is our philanthropy. So a lot of you know that the Greater Kansas City Community Foundation on a per capita basis is one of the most successful and important community foundations in all of the United States. And that's really a testament to, I think, the direction that we're headed as a city and what our culture as a city sort of looks like. But, you know, we have real issues that we need to address as well. I mean, I think there are a lot of areas where we can continue to improve, you know, as a city that, you know, we have to keep sustained attention on. There's no silver bullet for, mm-hmm. I mean, every single one of those issues.
Got to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Totally. Tyler Knotberg, I appreciate you coming on the show today. Michael Viazzoli, I appreciate you bringing Tyler on the show.
Glad it worked
out. And great show today, and I appreciate both your time, and thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We'll see you again next week on Grill Nation. Thanks for joining us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.